Hello, Mammoth. This is Matthew Lehman of Matthew Lehman Real Estate, and I want to thank you for joining us today in our real estate podcast in layman's terms. This week, Ashley and I are going to talk a little bit about transient rentals in Mammoth Lakes. And Ashley, you want to explain to everybody what a transient rental is?
Yeah, it's a fancy, confusing term we like to throw out there for short-term rentals. Basically, anything that's less than 30 days. But you know, most often I think we see it as vacation rentals. So maybe a weekend or a week. And of course, kind of a main thing that goes on in our area.
I guess it's transient rental, same as vacation rental. It's the same as nightly rentals. It's the same as everything. It's basically anybody that's just not renting more than a month. So
Yeah,
you always hear all the different terms thrown around. So I always want to clarify that, because people are, what's the difference between a transient rental and a nightly rental? It's like, well, it's the same thing, basically. Yeah. So, well, what I wanted to do, I thought it'd be kind of fun today, maybe just for the listeners that are out there, because so many people in Mammoth, is, as you know, buy a property often because they need some rental income off of it. It's a second or it's a third property. And you know, to be able to generate some income off it obviously helps offset some expenses. So I thought what I would do first is maybe we could go over some of the owner's advantages and some of the drawbacks that owners experience when they rent a property out on a transient basis. So I know one of them, I just to start off, you know, I think one of the big advantages that an owner has on a transient rental is just the flexibility. Having the flexibility of a nightly rental, obviously they have the ability to come up. They can stay in their condominium or their property, whatever that is, part-time. Maybe they want to come up, do skiing for a week or something like that, and then the rest of the time they can leave and then put it back on the rental program or just keep it on there but carve a week or so out for themselves.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think maybe at one point having a second home in the mountains or a second home at the beach was really kind of something that was reserved for, you know, maybe an elite class, you know, economically speaking. And being able to have a second home that you can rent out when you're not there really opened up the door to more people being able to take advantage of that, because they can help out, either cover the mortgage or at least pretty decently supplement their mortgage with income when they're not here.
Yeah. Yeah. It certainly has done that. And I think that's what's made, you can definitely see it in the real estate market, the properties that do allow rentability on a nightly basis certainly become more attractive to the open market for that very reason, because people can afford to offset some of their expenses. excuse me. And I know a couple other, you know, another item that's really seems to be attractive to as an owner advantage is the profitability. As you know, people that rent on a nightly basis can make more money than they can if they just rent it out monthly. And I know that's been a hot ticket up there. It's been the reason a lot of the prices have been popping up there, and also a lot of reasons some of the rents for the local housing have gone up. So it really just deals with the profitability of what a nightly rental can bring.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the benefits for with websites like Airbnb and VRBO and stuff like that is, you know, like when I travel, it used to be if you went to go travel to other places, you were a little limited on, like, you know, searching for hotels. And getting condos now opened up, and in some areas, and not so much in our area, we don't have a lot of single family homes that are available for rent, very few. But in some other places, you know, we've got family trips scheduled for later this year for weddings. And, you know, since we're traveling with the whole family, it's like, well, we might as well get a house. Then we're all together, but we have the privacy of not all being in, you know, hotel rooms in a big hotel. We get to actually, you know, be in a home together, but, you know, have that privacy from other people. And so I think for the travelers, and for the second homeowners, it's really, it definitely opened up a lot of benefits to people.
Yeah, and I find that a lot of the condos also are a lot bigger. They have more substantial kitchens and things of that nature, whereas a hotel may not even have a kitchen. If it does, it's probably just a little one or two burner stove,
Absolutely.
something along those lines. So you really can't settle in and enjoy yourself and make yourself at home. So another area I know that people have talked about as being a benefit, at least to the owners, is deductions and tax breaks. Owning a property like this versus just renting it on a monthly basis. And I guess I kind of see part of the benefits there, but I can kind of see that deductions would actually potentially apply in both areas, whether you're renting monthly or nightly. But I think the fact that there are some additional expenses that are probably involved with a nightly, not probably, but that are involved with a nightly rental. And the fact that you are, in fact, running it like a business versus just an income property, you probably get some benefits in the way of things like painting, wear and tear, stuff like that. If you end up having to replace carpets and stuff more frequently, at least you're going to be getting a benefit off of that somehow if you're running it as a business.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think it's worth there are a lot of benefits, but there's also I know it's been a point of contention. Every few years it seems to come up for a vote of one kind or another in Mammoth anyway, as to how much of a good thing starts not being a good thing. And what I mean by that is, we definitely have great amounts of condos and areas that are available for nightly rental, but the primary residents, the full-time locals, have made a pretty strong stance, it seems like, for maintaining that the neighborhoods, the single-family home neighborhoods, don't have nightly rentals and in an influx of guests on vacation every weekend.
Right, yeah, and I know as we move into the drawbacks here a little bit, that does seem to be one of the drawbacks that owners will experience when they're doing a nightly rental, and that's just the impacts on the neighborhood, your neighbors, your things like that. And I know one of the bigger complaints that we have gotten or heard of people having when they rent out on a nightly basis is just the fact that you've got people maybe parking in your spot, or there's noise or things of that nature. So I know that's one of the big drawbacks of renting out on a nightly basis.
Well, sure, because if yeah, I mean, if you depending on where your rental is, I mean, I think the rules in Mammoth seem to at least be consistent enough that if you decide to live full time in a condo, in most of the condo complexes that allow for nightly rentals, you kind of know going in that there's a good chance. I mean, I've done it. I've lived in condos in Mammoth, where I knew going in that there was a pretty solid chance that every weekend, at least for most of the summer and certainly all winter, that I would have people around me that I share walls with, that are up on vacation. And let's be honest, when you're up on vacation, it's kind of, you're not maybe not so concerned. Most
Party
people,
on.
anyway,
Yeah,
yeah,
good
you're up,
start.
you're
Yeah.
it's a party, it's your vacation, right? So maybe you're up later, and so if you are living next to that, it can be a little hard. I don't know if that's necessarily something that the owners or the renters end up dealing with it. That's more of a concern, I think, of for the people that are living around that. And that's why I think there's been such a push for the single family home neighborhoods. I live in one of those neighborhoods now, and got young kids and work in the morning, and it's just nice to know that we're not going to have a party every weekend next door.
Yeah, it is nice. I mean, I live in a condo and I always worry when I leave for work and or middle late morning, something like that, and I see the new guests coming in that are going to be staying above me, and they've got a dolly stacked to the top with beer and booze and everything else. And all I could think is, oh boy, this is going to be a fun weekend. So, and of course, you end up going out there and asking them to move from your parking space. The parking space, it says, please don't park here. This is for parking for, my unit only, but whatever. That's living in the mountain resort town. But, another issue, not issue so much, but a drawback rather. While the pay can be a lot better, a lot on a nightly basis, you make probably about a third or 50 or 100% more, just depending on the property and its location. One thing that is a bit of a drawback is the consistency of that payment. So whereas on a monthly basis, you might get, let's say, a one bedroom, you're going to get 1200, 1500 bucks a month. Nightly, you might get 3000, but those payments will be great in the wintertime, pretty good in the summer, but boy, in the spring and fall, they're gonna dry up.
Yeah, you have to be pretty good at budgeting, I think, right? You know, it's definitely inconsistent as far as, and also can vary. I know, and we're helping buyers who are looking for either investments or second homes, but need that kind of supplement, need that income to be able to make the numbers make sense. And we usually give them a bit of a range because the question always comes up of, well, what's the rental income? What's the rental income history? And it's like, well, if you look back over the last, 5 years or so, you can see the years, even a difference in the years that we had really good snow years, or maybe not so much, or maybe too much where the roads are closed and people can't get up here. You know, it really does vary. So yeah, you're right. When you look at the end of the year numbers, the nightly rentals may gross a lot higher profit than the monthly rentals. But if you have a monthly tenant, you know you're getting the same amount every month. And I think in addition to that, long-term tenants or tenants who are at least month to month or on, long-term leases, they usually also pick up the utilities. So your costs as an owner go down. You're not paying for that cleaning company to come in every week. You're not paying generally, electricity, cable, all that stuff if you have a long-term tenant. If you're doing short-term rentals, you're basically running your own hotel service. So you've got maid service, you do all the utilities. And sometimes you get a tenant that comes up for the weekend, and even though you have a great pellet stove or wood burning stove, they just turn on those really not cost efficient wall heaters for the entire stay. So,
Well, yeah, and then the thermostat is not the heater itself. Let's turn it on when we need heat. The thermostat becomes, let's leave the heater on, and when it gets too hot in here, we'll open the window and just let a little cold air in to kind of,
absolutely.
so
So,
that.
yeah, that's, I think it's very, I think the underlying theme here is depending on how your tolerance for variable costs and variable income. You know, if you're kind of more one of those people who likes to have a steady paycheck with a budget friendly, like here are my costs and here is my income every month, then even though you might not have as much money some years, or ever, maybe it's a better way to go to do an investment with a long-term rental or at least a seasonal rental where you have, if you're going to come up, you really love it up here in the summers, rent your place out for the winter or vice versa for something long-term. It'll be more steady. But otherwise, if you're going to jump into the nightly rental game, just be prepared for very flexible budgets.
Well, and it's a bit more effort too, because you have more people coming in and out. And like you said, you're going to have cleaning and this and that. And some people like doing it themselves. I mean, they may have a couple properties and they'll do it themselves if they live in town. And that's great. But, or you better have a good team available that's going to be reliable throughout the year, not just when it's slow, but also when it's busy. So, those are some of the more challenging aspects of it. So you're right, you have a higher gross, but is your net really higher at the end of the day? People seem to think it is, and it does tend to be, from what I can tell, it tends to be about 1% better net than it does if you go monthly. But it's really hard to It just depends on the property, as we know. So there's a lot of variables in there, but certainly maintenance costs, effort, and all those things come into play. And I think one of the last things that I'd point out is, is the neighborhood. I mean, condos are a little bit less challenging, just because, in Mammoth, of course, people are allowed to rent out. But if you do have neighbors that are local folks, and you rent out nightly, they can make it a little bit difficult for you. So,
Sure.
you always want to check into that before you turn your property into a nightly rental. So, real quick, I don't know if you remember back years ago. Of course you do. There was a Measure Z,
Oh, yes.
and Measure Z. Remember
That
that? That was an initiative.
discussion got spicy up here.
Oh, that was a spicy one for sure. Yeah, that was an initiative for those that aren't familiar with it. That. Basically, when people say, well, why can't I rent my home out, or why can't I do this or that with my nightly rental? There was an initiative called Measure Z, whereby the public actually instigated this initiative and went got enough votes to trump the council's ability to change nightly rentals in town. So while the council was considering looking at single-family homes as a nightly rental, if people wanted to do that, this group got together and they said, "Look, we don't want that to happen. In fact, we want to take it out of the town council's hands. If there's ever a decision about allowing nightly rentals from a single-family home, that has to go on the ballot and it has to go before the vote of the people." And therefore, it really stopped the ability for single-family homes to become nightly rentals in Mammoth. So people wonder why that's not possible. That is your answer right there. You'd have to get on the ballot box for that to ever see a change. It is allowed in certain communities, right? I mean, if it's zoned a resort or residential multifamily too, you can rent your property out. But usually, residential multifamily or single-family, generally speaking, is not permitted.
Sure, and I think we get that quite. I actually just enlightened someone this weekend on that, a buyer that was. As I was getting more into the conversation, obviously kind of new to the area and looking at what their goals were. And as soon as they, we started out with the condo townhome versus single family home and all this sort of stuff. But as soon as I asked the, well, do you plan on trying to rent this question? And they said, yes. I said, well, then we can stop looking at single family homes because, the reality is that the single family homes that do allow for nightly rentals for the most part are in areas like Grey Bear, which are, of course, for people who aren't familiar, the Grey Bear development is a beautiful neighborhood of large, kind of luxury style single family homes that are right on the Sierra Star Golf Course. And that have been built just in the last few years. And they are gorgeous. But they are also pretty expensive, I think, for the average buyer. They're probably a little out of reach. So, it's definitely something to consider and to know your limitations, depending on what your goals are for buying and for your second home. I know when that Measure Z thing was going on, and I live in the Trails neighborhood, that there were some, there's not a lot of second homeowners in our neighborhood anyway. It's mostly primary residents, but there were certainly the people who are second homeowners were very vocal about wanting that option, right? Of course they would be want to be able to get some help with these mortgages and property taxes and everything they pay when they only come up, six times a year. So I get it. But by and large, the rest of, at least in my neighborhood, said absolutely not.
Well, and certain neighborhoods started taking on their own character too. Like you said, the Trails, which is a very family, predominantly family, local neighborhood because it's right next to the schools. It's got the trail systems. They were adamantly opposed to it, as was the Mammoth Knolls neighborhood. But then you found other neighborhoods which found a lot of second homeowners and even locals that maybe had been near the ski slopes or Chair 15. They were a little bit more vocal in favor of allowing it. So, but unfortunately, that's not even an option anymore. People can't even have that discussion because it's not a possibility unless it goes to a
Well, and
ballot. And unfortunately, for it to go to ballot, you can't even have a discussion about it because what's going to go on the ballot is going to be something that has to be discussed ahead of time before it even gets there.
Sure.
So it's too bad that that initiative, I think, in a way, really took away people's rights and their ability to, be vocal and try to make a decision on something that may or may not
Yeah, I
work.
mean, I
So.
think at anytime something passes that doesn't allow for further discussion, because there you should never say never, right? There should always be some room for development down the road. I think one of the things too that for me personally, it was a concern with nightly rentals, and I think this we see this in ski towns across the country. Is that with the development of Airbnb and VRBO, and this kind of goes back a little bit to one of our last podcasts where we were discussing, what it's like to live in a resort town and the housing shortage. Part of allowing for more single family home Airbnb, VRBO type of activity is that. With it being possibly more profitable, what would incentivize the majority of second homeowners to let long-term rentals happen instead of just doing Airbnb and VRBO? And with at least with the way it is now, there are still people are still able to get long-term rentals up here because the owners aren't allowed any other options. So I don't know. It's I guess there's definitely pros and cons on both sides.
There are, and there's political pros and cons for transient rentals. Just dovetailing off of what you just said, the other argument would have been if you allowed more rentals, and especially for local residents, they might have rented the houses, or if people, or if they were going to allow nightly rentals of homes, maybe that would take off some of the burden or the demand that's out there. And shifted them to houses where local people may not have been able to afford a house, and now there's more condos
Sure,
available. So,
sure.
but who knows? Who knows? It might have just brought more people, and we don't know if that really would have helped or not.
Sure.
So, those are the discussions that really never got to take place. So, a couple of other, real quickly, I know some political pros and cons for the area. I know that the pros that the community wanted was it's an income generator for the town. I mean, 70% of our income, I believe, for the town comes from transient occupancy tax. So that's huge. And obviously that opened up a big door by, or could have opened up a big door for the town government. But that, of course, too, comes with a detriment to it, that if they had they allowed nightly rental of single family homes, yes, it would have generated more income, would have allowed more opportunity for those guests coming here. The downside of it is that our town was designed to have transient folks staying near, let's say, commercial districts, near buses, near transportation, things of that nature. And when you start allowing people to go into the neighborhoods which are deeper into the community, now you've disrupted that general plan of the town. And so there's a negative detriment to that too. And then maybe hotels are not going to come here any longer because the occupancy rates aren't high enough for them to, for it to be attractive for them to come
Sure,
here.
absolutely. And you mentioned the transient taxing, which we shortened it to TOT, the TOT taxes, which are collected from the owners. So the owners get their rental income. For people that don't know, the owners get their rental income, whether it's through Airbnb, VRBO, if they're running their own private rental site, or if they're using a property management company in town. A portion of what the tourism dollars are bringing in, the tourists are paying for their nightly rentals, is supposed to go be paid in taxes to the town, as you mentioned. And one, they've had a hard time tracking that money down from time to time for owners. And either it's just that they're just not paying it, or that if they're running their own private little rental sites, that they're trying to evade some of that. I know I personally have heard from owners who maybe they run their stuff through Airbnb and VRBO, and then if they have a consistent renter that's coming up, you know, every month all season, or comes up for the same 2-week holiday period every year, they've reached out to those people directly and said, hey, how about we take this off the books? I'll give you a little discount. You can just, you know, Venmo me the money, or however that works. And then they try to skate by without having to pay that TOT tax. And so there's a lot of shady little loopholes out there that I think's made it a little hard sometimes for the town. You know, even though the town has penalties for being late, or if they catch you trying to evade paying those taxes, I think there has been some difficulty in that.
Yeah, there has. And I, having sat on town council and been deeply involved in this, it was interesting because we had to come up with some new laws as Airbnb and VRBO was evolving. It was trying to stay ahead of the curve of what people were doing and not doing. And, you know, we found, I mean, people, there were some very high-end homes up near the slopes that had been renting for quite a period of time. And one of them ended up, and they were in bankruptcy situation, but they ended up owing, admittedly owing $300,000 in back TOT taxes, which tells you just how much money these folks were making, which is great. And they were actually allowed to. That's the weird thing. They were allowed to do it. They just didn't pay the taxes. And where they got themselves in a little bit of hot water was they were actually not just charging the rent, but they were charging for the TOT tax and not paying it.
Oh, well, so, then that's...
When you do that, that ends up being fraud, yeah, and that was a bigger deal.
That's real bad.
So.
And didn't, I believe you had told me that Airbnb... So if you go through a property management company in town, and I think that's one of the perks, because if you're going to do this whole nightly rental thing on your second home, at least for me, I wouldn't want to have to try to stay on top of all this stuff, right? Because I don't want to ever get in trouble. So one of the benefits of going through one of the many different property management companies we have the option of choosing from up here is that most of them have worked it, or if not all of them, have worked it into what you pay the property management company, their chunk that they take, their percentage that they take out of your rental income before you ever even see it, includes that TOT tax. They essentially just take what's due and they pay it for you so that you're always in compliance. But I think you had said that the Airbnb had offered to do a similar thing and that the lodging community kind of fought back on that, maybe because some people did have kind of this side gig going and said, no. We don't want you to do that.
Well, yeah. So there was a, there is. So, some of the rental companies or agencies up here, some charge, some do, some will take care of the TOT, some won't. You see a big sliding scale. People will charge anywhere from, let's say, 15% or even 10% all the way up to 50, 60%, depending on what level of service you want. And so a lot of them won't even, they won't take the TOT money. They won't do anything. All they want to do is just, they don't want to touch the money. All they want to do is do the booking. So they'll be at the lower end of the scale. And there's good and there's bad rental companies. And, you know, obviously they can call us people if they're interested and find out who we like and who we don't like, because you don't want a bad one. You get the wrong one, they're going to end up probably doing you a larger disservice than a service. But to answer your question, yes. I mean, they did have that problem. Airbnb, you know, the town was having such a problem with the collections at first. Airbnb came and said, look, you know, we'll collect the money for you. We'll require it, and it's going to be collected up front. You tell us how much it is, and whenever someone rents in this city, we'll collect it for you. But we're going to charge you a portion of it. And, you know, of course, the lodging community had a big pushback on that and didn't think they'd like that. They shouldn't be charged for it. But at the same time, the town has to pay substantially to try to collect that money. Plus, amount of money that's never collected is probably far more than Airbnb would have ever charged.
Absolutely.
So
Yeah.
obviously, it'd be a lot more efficient just to do it through all the rental agencies. And it should be a statewide mandate if that's in fact what's going to happen. That would just take a lot of the burden off of people and people trying to sneak around or not pay or not do this or not do that.
Sure. So
So,
the moral, the takeaway of that whole segment is people pay your taxes. Ah, we don't like
yeah,
it.
just
No one
pay it.
likes it.
Well,
No one likes it. It's okay. You know, none of them
no.
like it, but you get in
Well,
big trouble if you don't pay them.
you do get in big trouble. And not only that, I mean, if you just look, I mean, none of us are fans of taxes, but it is what pays for our police and, other things, snow removal, all the stuff that we like up here. So, if you like coming up here and you like driving to your condo and not having 3 feet of snow on the roads, well, guess what? We got one of the best snow removal systems in the world, and I think, and we do a great job of it, but it costs money. It costs a lot of
Yes.
money. So, well, there are a lot of pros, there are a lot of cons. I'm sure you and I, again, like all of our podcasts, we could go on for about another hour or so, but probably not going to do that. We want to keep it relatively short and keep you informed without boring you out of your mind.
Sure.
So, what we will do is, yeah, I don't know if you have anything else you wanted
Well,
to
I
add.
guess just the one note that is relevant right now, of course, is that due to the coronavirus activity and the protocols still in place in our state anyway, and then into our town, there are no transient rentals currently. So that's not something, but they will come back. You know, they will. They will come back. They're just trying to keep the occupancy of the town low for now, but this is not something that's just gone now. So,
Well, for anybody that's thinking about renting nightly or weighing whether or not to rent nightly or monthly, I will say this. I have heard through the grapevine that the town may be limiting TOT certifications, which is your permission to rent on a nightly basis. So if you don't have one or if that's a consideration for you, there may be a reason either to one, start renting night or monthly. Or get your TOT certification in order to try to preserve that right, if that's even a possibility. So something to think
sure.
about.
And definitely contact us if you want some more help with all of that legal mumbo jumbo.
That's right. Yeah. Well, and yeah, for those of you that aren't members on our Facebook page, don't forget to sign up on our podcast, which is anchor.com. Or look for Matthew Lehman Real Estate on Facebook. Just like us there. We usually post a lot of information there that'll keep you up to date. You can also email me or Ashley at matthew@homesmammoth.com or ashley@homesmammoth.com. And unless you have anything else, Ashley, I'm going to just say thank you and hope you guys join us for our next episode
No,
next
that's
week.
about it. Yeah, everybody stay safe out there.